Today's episode of This Week I Learned is brought to you by the Lincoln MKZ Hybrid, with a fully retractable panoramic roof for more sky than any other luxury sedan. Hello and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that female dolphins have the most incredible defense against sexual predators: weaponized vaginas. It can be exceptionally difficult, if not flat out rare, to observe dolphins mate in the wild. And because female genitalia are internal structures, scientists just haven't understood all that much about the dolphin vagina. That was until a researcher by the name of Dara Orbach from Canada's Dalhousie University came along. Orbach thought that because dolphin penises come in a variety of shapes and sizes, that the dolphin vaginas might too. So Orbach and her team needed to get their hands on some dolphin genitalia. Over time, they were able to acquire the genitals of marine mammals that had died of natural causes. They ended up with the male and female pairs from four different species: common and bottlenose dolphins, common porpoises, and common seals. These were all from the same region as well, so there wasn't too much variation in the species. Then, through a rather graphic yet methodically scientific process that I won't get into now, the team created digital 3D models of all the pairs to determine just how the penis fit into the vagina of each species. The genitals of the common dolphin and common seal didn't reveal anything too surprising. The vaginas of those species seem to have evolved to allow pretty easy access to males. But the common porpoise and the bottlenose dolphin vaginas turned out to be incredibly fascinating. The researchers found those vaginas to be wildly intricate, with all sorts of twists and turns and folds that can actually work to obstruct penis entry. And this revelation is especially interesting when you consider how male bottlenose dolphins mate, which is to say, aggressively. Male bottlenose dolphins form alliances with other males, sort of groups of two or four. This helps keep other males away when the gang approaches a female to mate. The female also finds she has little choice when faced with a gang, so she acquiesces not only to one dolphin, but usually all of them. Lovely, right? Sadly, not all that uncommon in the animal kingdom. But one of the problems with such aggressive mating is that dolphins have one of the longer gestation periods among mammals, which means the cost of having a calf with an unsuitable male could be huge. And that's where the weaponized vagina comes in. The many twists, turns, and folds of the bottlenose dolphin vagina gives the female an evolutionary advantage. She may not be able to choose who mates with her, but she can choose who fertilizes her. During copulation, a female can make subtle movements halfway through, sending the penis in the wrong direction and saving her from fertilization. Female dolphins may appear passive in their behavior, but their reproductive anatomy shows that they're evolutionarily fighting the dolphin patriarchy in their own killer way. This week I learned the placebo effect has an evil twin, and it's not doing you any favors. The placebo effect is this fascinating phenomenon that comes up in medical studies. Say a group of volunteers is split into two, one group gets a sugar pill, the other gets the actual medicine, and weirdly, the folks who weren't taking any medicine report the same positive benefits that the trial group experienced. And it's not just limited to fake pills. Doctors have even performed fake surgeries and also had positive results. The placebo effect can also work when subjects know that they're on a placebo. The placebo effect is the idea that your brain can convince your body that a fake treatment is the real thing. It can't cure cancer or lower your cholesterol, but it does seem to be able to influence symptoms that are controlled by the brain, like our perceptions of pain, for example. In short, believing a treatment or medicine is going to work can create a stronger connection between the brain and body that can result in real positive results. The bad news is there's a counter to the placebo. It's called the nocebo. Studies have shown that patients experience negative side effects when on a sugar pill. The nocebo kicks in when our expectations take a negative turn. In a new study published in the journal Science, researchers tested whether they could manipulate the power of the nocebo effect, making volunteers feel more or less pain. One half of the group was led to believe the anti-itch cream they were taking was more expensive. They were also told that it could make them more sensitive to heat. The other group was led to believe that their cream was cheap, but could also have the same negative side effect. The reality was that the cream was the same for both groups and just a placebo. And what researchers found was that the volunteers who had the expensive cream thought it hurt more, and the more they used the cream, the more pain they reported feeling. The power of placebos and nocebos comes down to expectations, and the perception of cost comes down to believing that expensive products would be more potent. While other studies continue to test out the therapeutic power of the placebo effect, this study really reveals that it does have its limits and can switch just as easily to its evil twin, depending on a person's expectations. This week I learned that during World War II, the Nazis, who were known for plundering their victims for their art and valuables, stole an entire room made of amber. Some call it the eighth wonder of the world. The Amber Room was a chamber built for the first king of Prussia in the early 1700s. The panels of the room were made entirely from amber, with borders of gold leaf and inlaid with mirrored panels. It was no doubt a shimmering masterpiece. It was placed in the Berlin City Palace, and in 1716, when Russian Tsar Peter the Great visited the room, he was said to be utterly enchanted. And so, sometime after Peter's trip, the second king of Prussia, Frederick William I, gave the Tsar the room as a symbol of the two states' relationship. The room was taken apart and moved to Russia, where it eventually found a home in the Catherine Palace, which was the summer residence of the Russian Tsars, located in modern-day Pushkin. Fast forward to 1941. The Nazis invade the Soviet Union, pillaging the nation's treasures, their sights set on the Amber Room. The Soviets tried to protect their prized possession by dismantling it and moving it to a secret location, but the amber proved too delicate to move. So they tried wallpapering the gold walls and hiding it in plain sight, but the Nazis won this battle. They disassembled the room, packed it into 27 crates, and returned it to Germany. The room was reportedly assembled at the Königsberg Castle in the Prussia port city of Königsberg. When the Soviets advanced on that city, the Nazis packed the room up once again and hid their stolen room in the cellar of the castle. Königsberg was bombed to oblivion. The castle was burnt to the ground, and no one ever saw that golden room ever again. But theories of the room's location abound, and rumors surface like a perennial flower. Some researchers believe it's still hidden right where it was left. Others think it's hidden beneath a castle in the Czech Republic, and others still think it's in an old wartime bunker in Germany. But none of these hunches have produced a 10-foot by 7-foot room made entirely of amber. And despite the efforts of researchers, amateur treasure hunters, and German and Russian officials, the disappearance of the Amber Room remains a mystery. This week I learned that Central Europe has a radioactive pig problem. The serious swine issue stems from the 30-year-old Chernobyl disaster.
There has been a nuclear accident in the Soviet Union, and the Soviets have admitted that it happened. The Soviet version is this.
In April 1986, the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in the Ukraine exploded, spewing radioactive chemicals into the air.
The Soviets may have been fairly quick to acknowledge the accident because evidence in the form of mild nuclear radiation had already reached beyond the Soviet borders to Scandinavia. We
begin with ABC. An 18-mile zone surrounding the plant was evacuated and deemed unlivable for the contamination. But experts estimate that those radioactive chemicals carried by the wind likely traveled hundreds, if not thousands, of miles away. One study found that a small amount of the radioactive metal called cesium-137 blew 1,000 miles west, landing in the Czech Republic. There, the metal settled into the soil and was absorbed by the wild mushrooms that grow so plentifully in the mountainous region. Now, decades later, wild boars that roam the mountains and subsist almost exclusively on the native wild mushrooms during the cold winter months are bursting with radioactivity. And this is a problem because boar meat is a Czech food staple. Between 2014 and 2016, food inspectors discovered nearly half of the 600 or so pigs inspected were too radioactive to eat. And the problem may not be so well contained either. A few years ago, the German government also found that one in three boars killed by hunters was radioactive. The chemical cesium-137 is not safe for human consumption. Eating it can increase a person's risk for cancers. The good news is that eating the occasional radioactive boar meat wouldn't contain high enough a dose of cesium-137 to really be considered a risk. It's only if you're accidentally consuming the radioactive meat multiple times a week for months on end that you should be concerned for your health. Luckily, Czech officials are on the case, inspecting boar meat and banning anything that comes up radioactive. So the next time you're in the Czech Republic, feel free to dive into the local wild boar goulash, but maybe skip the freshly killed pig roast. And that does it for this episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you'd like to read more about any of the facts I've mentioned here, you can head on over to theweek.com/podcasts, where you'll also find our 7-Minute Opinions and 7-Minute Explainer series. And if you've come across any scientific tidbits, mind-blowing studies, girl power animal revelations, or historical curiosities, email me. You can reach me at podcasts@theweek.com. Just put podcasts in the subject. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.